Usually when we talk about a medical diagnosis, there's this underlying expectation of precision. Feels like engineering, you know?
Right. It feels very clear-cut.
Exactly. You break your arm, the x-ray shows a jagged white line, and the doctor points to it. Broken or not broken, it's clean, it's binary, and it just makes sense.
But today, we are stepping into a diagnostic landscape that is, well, it's incredibly murky.
Yeah, it really is. Today, our mission on this deep dive is to explore how modern medicine is completely shifting paradigms across four completely different, highly dangerous diseases.
We're talking about a deadly superbug, two distinct types of heart failure, and leukemia.
Yep. And we're doing it by zooming way, way in on their hidden microscopic mechanics. We've got this fascinating stack of sources for highly technical review articles from the annual reviews journals.
Covering pharmacology, physiology, pathology, and medicine.
Right. And to avoid totally overloading you with information, we're going to tackle each article clearly and separately, one right after the other. We'll look at the research question, the methodology, the key findings, and, you know, the actual practical implications.
And while these diseases vary wildly on the surface, they all share a really powerful unifying theme.
Which is?
We're redefining how we treat intractable illnesses. Not by using blunt instruments, but through profound, precise mechanistic understanding. Finding the exact microscopic failure.
Okay, let's start with Article 1. We're looking at what feels like an insurmountable external threat antibiotic resistance. Specifically, the superbug MRSA, or Staphylococcus aureus.
Yeah, it's a terrifying reality.
Right. The research question here is basically, how do we fight back when these bacteria are rapidly developing resistance to new antibiotics?
Faster than we can invent them, I might add. Which is why the methodology here is so interesting. Researchers reviewed recent advances in drug repurposing.
Right, like looking at FDA-approved drugs that were originally developed for completely non-infectious diseases and using them against SA.
Exactly, because we already understand the safety and pharmacokinetic profiles of these old drugs. We know how the liver processes them, how they circulate.
That saves years of testing, right?
It saves a massive amount of time. But the key findings show six distinct mechanistic categories for how these old drugs fight the bacteria. For instance, the inhibition of bacterial virulence factors.
Okay, let's unpack this. Think of a virulence factor as the bacteria's offensive weaponry. It's like the microscopic enzyme the bacteria uses to chew through our host tissue.
Or the toxin it releases to destroy rebelled blood cells, yeah.
Right. So it's like realizing a chemical spray you bought to keep rust off your car engine is actually the perfect weapon to dissolve an alien invader's armor.
That's a great way to look at it. Some of these repurposed drugs act like chemical handcuffs. They physically bind to those microscopic weapons.
So they don't actually kill the MRSA cell?
No. The bacteria survives. It's just completely disarmed and rendered harmless, which allows the body's innate immunity to sweep it away.
Wow. You already know the spray is safe to handle. You just never knew it could disarm a superbug. What else did they find?
Well, there's also the resensitization of the bacteria to existing antibiotics.
Oh, like stripping away its newly evolved defenses.
Exactly. Say, MRSA develops an efflux pump, like a microscopic vacuum, that spits traditional antibiotics back out. A repurposed drug can come in and jam that specific pump.
Giving it an Achilles heel again. That is brilliant.
And the practical implications are huge. The other categories involve making the bacteria more susceptible to our immunity, protecting host cells, augmenting overall immune functions, and crucially, modulating pathological inflammation.
That offers such a multifaceted framework. We aren't relying on one new chemical bomb. We're improving infection outcomes using existing safe therapeutics.
It's a masterclass in using microscopic precision to outsmart an external invader.
Okay, so that was Article 1. But what happens when the threat isn't a foreign bacteria? What happens when an internal mechanism in our own body just, you know, goes rogue?
Right, transitioning from external to internal. That brings us to Article 2, and we're moving to the heart.
Specifically, looking at the precise role of a signaling molecule called CAMPII.
Yeah, calcium calmodulin-dependent protein kinase 2. The researchers reviewed the literature to map out how this molecule transitions the heart from a healthy state homeostasis to a diseased state or pathology.
So what were the key findings? Because I know CAMKII is absolutely essential for the heart, right?
Oh, it's vital. It regulates contractility, pacemaking, and electrical conduction. It does this by phosphorylating ion channels and calcium handling proteins.
Basically adding a tiny chemical tag to the microscopic floodgates on a heart cell. to tell them to open or close.
Right, acting like a dockmaster to manage the flow of calcium. But the problem is, CAMK2i is highly sensitive to stress stimuli.
Like what kind of stress?
Things like intracellular calcium overload, reactive oxygen species, nitric oxide, and glycolytic byproducts. Essentially, cellular exhaust.
And when exposed to that exhaust?
It panics. It goes rogue, promoting fatal arrhythmias, cell death, and massive inflammatory signaling.
The conductor drops the baton and just starts smashing the instruments.
Yeah.
Which cascades into full-blown heart failure.
What's fascinating here is that a molecule completely necessary for life is the exact same one that causes destruction under stress.
So what does this all mean? If CAMK2i is absolutely critical for our normal heartbeat and pacemaking, how can researchers possibly target it when it goes bad without accidentally stopping the heart's normal functions altogether?
That's the practical implication the researchers highlight. Understanding this exact trigger point makes CAMK2i a crucial target. You don't destroy the whole molecule.
Right, you can't just turn it off.
Exactly. You target the specific stress-sensing pockets on its surface. You essentially put earplugs on the conductor so they don't hear the panic alarms, but leave their hands free to keep conducting the heartbeat.
That is incredible surgical precision, intercepting the rogue signal while preserving the essential architecture of the heart.
Precisely.
Which perfectly transitions us to Article 3, because here's where it gets really interesting. We're shifting from a perfectly balanced molecule in the heart to the perfectly balanced physical structure of DNA in the blood.
Right. Looking at blood cancers like leukemia, the research question here is how the physical 3D organization of our genome-specifically disordered chromatin looping contributes to disease development.
So for their methodology, the researchers trace the evolution of our understanding of this chromatin looping process, comparing healthy blood cell formation versus malignant hematopoiesis.
Yes. For decades, the focus was just on the linear sequence of DNA, looking for spelling errors. But the key finding here is that genomic organization is a delicate balancing act.
Between tightly packing 2 meters of DNA into a microscopic nucleus and looping it specifically to regulate gene expression.
Exactly. And this folding is mediated by DNA binding proteins, namely CTCF and cohesin.
I love the analogy for this. DNA isn't just a long, flat string of genetic letters. You know, it's a 3D piece of origami.
Yeah, that's a perfect visual.
And the proteins CTCF and cohesin act like tiny molecular paperclips holding the loops together. So what happens when it goes wrong?
The major finding is that recurrent mutations in these exact looping factors, the paperclips, are incredibly common in cancers, particularly leukemia and myelodysplastic syndromes, or MDS.
Wow. So if those paperclips mutate and break, the origami unfolds wrong, the cell misreads its own structural instructions, and it turns cancerous.
Right. The genetic code itself might be fine, but the physical shape it's folded into is completely wrong.
So what are the practical implications of knowing this?
Well, because there is such a tight association between chromatin looping and gene expression, these looping factors are now prime therapeutic targets.
Oh, so instead of just carpet bombing the body with chemo, they're looking for ways to physically fix the broken paperclip.
Exactly. Treating the literal architecture of the cell.
That is mind-blowing. Physically misfolded DNA loops causing blood cancer.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, you know, we just looked at physically misfolded DNA loops. Our final article focuses on physically misfolded proteins building up where they shouldn't.
Bringing us right back to the heart for Article 4.
Yes, looking at transthyretin amyloid cardiomyopathy, or ATTRCM. The researchers wanted to know how recent advancements in diagnosis and treatment are totally transforming the landscape of this disease.
So they provided a really comprehensive review, outlining the epidemiology, pathophysiology, diagnosis, and treatment of ATTRCM, just to capture all these recent paradigm-shifting developments.
And the key findings here are huge. Historically, ATTRCM has been a significant underdiagnosed and fatal cause of heart failure.
Why was it so underdiagnosed?
Because of the misfolded proteins. Transthyretin is normally a stable transport protein in the blood, but in ATTRCM, it fragments and misfolds, forming rigid amyloid fibrils that deposit into the heart muscle, making it stiff.
Like a sponge that's dried out and calcified.
Exactly. And to confirm that those misfolded proteins were there, a doctor previously had to perform an invasive endomyocardial biopsy.
Wait, really? So previously we had to literally surgically extract a piece of the beating heart just to confirm this disease?
Yes. You had to physically cut out a piece of tissue to look under a microscope.
Well, obviously cardiologists aren't going to order that for every patient with general shortness of breath. No wonder it was underdiagnosed.
Right. But the breakthrough is new non-invasive imaging techniques, specifically specialized nuclear medicine bone scans. They allow doctors to detect these amyloid deposits at much earlier stages.
Without making a single incision, just a scan.
Exactly. And this breakthrough has caused a massive shift toward active screening.
The fact that we can now just use non-invasive imaging must mean there are thousands of people who can finally get an accurate diagnosis early enough to actually use these new therapies, right?
That's the practical implication. We're witnessing a total paradigm shift. ATTR-CM is changing from an undetectable, fatal death sentence into a disease that can be actively screened for and managed.
Using a combination of new targeted therapeutics, like stabilizers that hold the protein together, and standard heart failure therapies.
If we connect this to the bigger picture again, removing the barrier of invasive biopsies entirely changes the epidemiological landscape of a disease. It's incredible.
It really is. So to kind of summarize and tie these four articles together for you listening, whether it's repurposing safe old drugs to fight MRSA, taming the stress-triggered CAM-MKI in the heart,
or fixing the DNA origami paperclips in leukemia, or using non-invasive imaging to catch amyloidosis without a scalpel.
The takeaway is incredibly clear. The future of your healthcare lies in profound microscopic precision.
Absolutely. And it's important to remember that critical thinking is essential here. By understanding why diseases happen at the molecular level, seeing the broken mechanisms, we avoid feeling so overwhelmed by the sheer volume of medical threats out there.
You turn insurmountable terrors into mechanical problems that we can actually solve. And I want to leave you with a final provocative thought that really combines everything we discussed today.
Okay, let's hear it.
The research showed us that we can brilliantly repurpose old FDA-approved pills for new superbugs, and we can use new imaging to catch heart disease early. So, what if the ultimate cure for the genetic misfolding in leukemia or that rogue CAM-KI in the heart isn't a new multi-billion dollar drug at all?
Oh, wow.
Right. What if the exact molecule needed to fix those DNA paperclips is already sitting on a pharmacy shelf right now, originally designed for something else entirely, just waiting for the right imaging tech to connect the dots? Something for you to think about. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, and we'll catch you next time.